From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our topic on this edition of the program, the race for the White House begins in earnest. Now that the major party conventions have concluded, it's time to take stock of their respective themes, imagery, and impact. We will also look ahead to the campaign trail, such as it is in the age of the coronavirus pandemic, and the presidential and vice presidential debates. And who better to do that with than our veteran political analysts, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Well, both Democratic and Republican national conventions were set against the backdrop of the coronavirus pandemic. More than 180,000 people have lost their lives in the United States due to COVID-19. The unemployment rate stands at over 10%, and protests against racial injustice and inequality in America continue. Another shooting of a black man, this time in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Mr. Jacob Blake, prompted professional sports teams across the United States to take a stand against the violence as games were called off in solidarity with the Milwaukee Bucks, who began the boycott. First, to the Republican National Convention. Analysts say that the Republican National Convention broke with some long-standing norms, the first of which was the fact that there was no committee platform. According to the Washington Post, quote, "For the first time since its founding more than 160 years ago, the GOP is not announcing a platform for a presidential election, and it has proclaimed that any attempt to adopt a new platform will be ruled out of order," closed quote. This development prompted some critics to allege that the Republicans were providing a blank check pledge to support anything President Trump decides to do, no matter how erratic or potentially lawless. Which brings us to the convention visuals. Republicans, like Democrats, could not hold their traditional quadrennial confabs in the normal manner with tens of thousands of delegates, supporters, and press due to the coronavirus pandemic. Mr. Trump made the decision to hold many convention activities at the White House, which sparked some controversy because it is considered unlawful to use federal property for partisan political purposes. President Trump was determined to have an upbeat message, but his words and those of many other speakers actually painted a dire image of an America if he is not reelected.
This is the most important election in the history of our country. At no time before have voters faced a clearer choice between two parties, two visions, two philosophies, or two agendas. This election will decide whether we save the American dream or whether we allow a socialist agenda to demolish our cherished destiny. Your vote will decide whether we protect law-abiding Americans or whether we give free rein to violent anarchists and agitators and criminals who threaten our citizens. And this election will decide whether we will defend the American way of life or whether we will allow a radical movement to completely dismantle and destroy it.
President Donald Trump accepting his party's nomination for re-election. In contrast, the Democratic National Convention emphasized the themes of decency, unity, and empathy in a nation afflicted by a once-in-a-century pandemic, economic crisis, and racial inequality. Former Vice President Joe Biden, who accepted his party's nomination for president, was portrayed as a competent and decent leader who would heal the nation.
The current president has cloaked American darkness for much too long. Too much anger, too much fear, too much division. Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. It's time for us, for we the people, to come together.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee for president. And with that, I am pleased to welcome our regular panelists to the Press Conference USA format. John Fortier is director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. And of course, Jim Kessler, he's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. And they join me via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Good to be here.
So, John Fortier, let's begin with you. Let's first talk about the Republican National Convention and sort of the remote aspect aside. How much, in your view, did this convention depart from the norms of a political party convention?
It is true that conventions are more president-centric than they used to be. The party is important, but the presidential candidates lead. And if you have an incumbent in the White House, Donald Trump is the incumbent, really, it's more about him than it is about anything else. So it was, on both sides, a message of trying to put the best face forward for the candidate in the party. I do think that the Republicans tried to do a few things. One was to, in some ways, tone down Donald Trump. Many people don't like Donald Trump, on the Democratic Party especially, and he is seen as off-script and bombastic. Sure, there was some of that, but in many ways, his speech was long and scripted and hit on points that he wanted to. Two other differences. The Republican Party is not as diverse a party as the Democratic Party by a wide margin, but they did emphasize diverse voices. The number of African-American speakers that the Republicans put up was really quite high. The president emphasized some of his accomplishments in a bipartisan way, especially criminal justice reform. And then I guess the big thing is, of course, the president had big messages of division between Republicans and Democrats, or between anti-establishment Republicans and the establishment. And those, of course, were the older issues like immigration and trade, but especially this emphasis of worries about the violence in cities and need for law and order. That is, I think, the biggest theme the Republicans put forward, the newest theme, the one that they think might move some voters, and is one that they emphasized not only through Donald Trump's message, but also through some of the speaker's messages as well. So will that work? Donald Trump is behind in the polls. We don't know. I think there's certainly some possibility of more Republicans coming home to Donald Trump and defining Joe Biden. But, you know, it's a significant lead for Biden in the polls. And also the coronavirus is, and the economy is a big negative factor for Trump. So I think that was the message that they tried to put forth.
So turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your reaction to particularly the Republican National Convention and Mr. Trump in particular, and then we'll get into the DNC. But what's your take on the visuals and the message?
In some ways, the Democratic Convention was more unique than the Republican Convention. The Republican Convention still followed sort of the tyranny of the podium. There's somebody standing at a podium speaking to you. The Democratic Convention really tried to break out of it, since it was not chained to, you know, an auditorium. Republicans did not make that choice. Look, conventions don't change people's minds. First of all, the number of people watching them these days, it's really shrunk, particularly the Republican convention. But what it does is it gives you a window into what the strategy is that they are going to pursue going forward. And that's really the value of this. And with Donald Trump, what you saw is there's really a handful of things that they feel they have to change in order to win. One of them is the narrative on his handling of the COVID-19 crisis. So January, February, and March, he dithered and he reacted very, very slowly. There were a couple of things he did, but mostly he downplayed it. You would never know it looking at the convention. This was the greatest mobilization since World War II. They talked about Operation Warp Speed, which, by the way, they announced in June, even though the virus showed up in January. And they must feel that unless they change people's views of his reaction towards the virus, then they're in trouble. The other, as John pointed out, was they tried to paint him as an empathetic guy and kind and decent man and someone who really cares about people and reaches out and says, like, how's your aunt doing? I heard she had heart surgery. And that really isn't Donald Trump, but they tried to portray it. And the other was that he wasn't a racist. And there are 252 elected Republican officials in Washington. Two of them are Black. You would never know it from the primetime viewing. And I don't think this is an appeal to Black voters. This is an appeal to suburban white voters to say, like, look, he's not a racist. If he was a racist, all these African-Americans and Latinos and even Muslims wouldn't have shown up. This is a window into their strategy going forward.
So back to you, John Fortier. That's an interesting way of looking at it that Jim Kessler just articulated that these conventions, they're not really watched by so many people. We all watch them and think they're so important, but rather they're a window into the strategy going forward. So once again, we're going to get into Democrats in a second, but back to Mr. Trump and the Republicans. How do you see Mr. Trump's strategy going forward as the convention portrayed? What window into the strategy do you derive?
Well, look, I agree with most of what Jim said. I do think that the big issue hanging over the president is the coronavirus and the economy and the change and chaos that's come because of that. If the president were running on his record as it looked in January or February, I think he would be running much more like a traditional incumbent who could say, here's peace and prosperity. And they're having to say things like, well, the economy was great. We created all these jobs. It was really at a great level, and we can get back to that. And that we've done some things with coronavirus and better things are to come and we're going to turn the corner. Those are hard messages for an incumbent. I think the law and order message is one that's going to divide the parties and one that I think they think has some resonance. And arguably, it had much more play than the immigration issue, which was, of course, a hot populist issue in many ways. And so I do think that is something they will continue to make use of. Again, as an incumbent, it would be easier if you were not the incumbent, if you were from the outside saying, look, all of this happened under Democrats' watch. But I do think that the president is trying and the party is trying to portray Joe Biden as somebody who maybe if he's not as left-wing as some, he's going to be taken over by them and he's going to be not as competent. And therefore, these trends that you're seeing in the more left part of the party and violence in the streets are things that are going to continue and that Donald Trump is a better way of stopping that or at least stating some opposition to that. So I think that issue is one that, of course, has been building over the summer, but they've made that a much more signal issue. And of course, it's going to be with us. And perhaps it's something that will matter in the Midwest states where, of course, is still the key battlegrounds if this race tightens up.
So back to you, Jim Kessler, based on what John Fortier just said, emphasizing the law and order message by Mr. Trump and the Republicans. I think John said that if this were not happening on his watch, maybe it would resonate more. On the other hand, do you think President Trump and other Republicans were successful in their arguments that this is actually all happening on the Democrats' watch? It seems to me that was the message. They consistently said that in Joe Biden's America, there will be agitators, rioters, flag burners, that he will not keep the peace. He's a Trojan horse. He will be a vessel through which the left wing of the party will use for their ends. He said that the top 10 most dangerous cities were run by Democrats, etc. Do you think that's going to work for the voters he's trying to reach, the suburban, white women and others? Will they buy that?
It may. I think they feel they have an issue. They don't have many. Okay. This is not a super target rich environment for Republicans. They have a couple, and this is one that they feel that they have. I think one of the things that Donald Trump does better than any politician I've ever seen is he's a great blame shifter. So, one way of looking at it is this is all happening on your watch, President Trump, but he is making this, no, this is happening on the watch of the mayor of Kenosha, Wisconsin, and, other places with their mayors. And I think what it's going to come down to is, and you can see some struggling of this in the early days of the first 2 days of the Republican convention, which is, do voters want a healer or a fighter? And, Joe Biden is clearly in the healer category and Donald Trump is in the fighter category. And you could see in the first 2 days of the convention, the rhetoric was a bit subdued towards the civil unrest. And there were the occasional bromides about Jacob Blake. By days 3 and 4, they were all in. And it was, it's jobs, not mobs. And, they're going in on this very, very hard. And whether it succeeds or not really depends on how the Democrats handle this as well. Joe Biden is probably the best Democrat to handle this. He is a law and order Democrat. He wrote the 1994 crime bill. He put 100,000 police on the streets. This is what he was criticized for during the Democratic primary. But, Republicans are trying to say that was Joe Biden back then, but he's been captured by the left. We'll see how this plays out, but this is definitely the strategy that Republicans are going to employ.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. They join me via Microsoft Teams. We're analyzing the style and substance and implications of the Republican and Democratic National Conventions. I'm Carol Castiel, and this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Here's a shout out to our loyal Twitter follower, Timothy Arazu from Anambra, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com, or better yet, like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. So back to our discussion of the Republicans and Democrats. John Fortier, let's look at the Democratic National Convention, which actually preceded the Republican National Convention. What was your takeaway from that? Visuals, messaging, and so forth.
Well, I think it represented a sort of safe convention for somebody who's ahead in the polls, Joe Biden. And I mean that in a couple of ways. One, I think the convention was meant to showcase the diversity of the Democratic Party, diversity in all sorts of ways, but certainly racial, ethnic, gender, regional diversity that we often see, and that the Democratic Party is much more diverse than the Republican Party. Also, a diversity, but a unity in the wings. You certainly had the opponents of Joe Biden, the Bernie Sanders and others who are more to the left, coming together and saying, you know, Joe Biden's our person. So there was really little dissent. And on the other side, highlighting some Republicans, some more college educated Republicans who've drifted away from the Republican Party, and some politicians who are willing to come up and say they're supporting Joe Biden. So I think that was one message, a unity, a stability. And then I think the second thing was to just showcase Joe Biden himself. And, you know, it may seem an odd thing that the American people might not know Joe Biden that well. He's been in politics for over 40 years. He was the vice president. But in a certain way, he had a very short terminated campaign because of coronavirus. Republicans have been criticizing him for being in the basement. He hasn't been out as much. Maybe there's some good reasons for that. And the studies show that Republicans have some opportunity to define him in a way. He's not as well defined as Hillary Clinton was. He's certainly not as defined as Donald Trump. His negatives aren't as high. And so the speech, I think, was really a place for them to show that he was a competent person. And here he was, a leader for the times. And so building him up as a positive message and somebody who really can lead in a unifying way, and showing this party that's diverse and having great unity among the left and right, I think those were the two big messages that the Democratic Party tried to show in a time where they're leading in the polls.
Over to you, Jim Kessler, with your finger on the pulse of the Democrats. How would you characterize the convention, the message, the substance? Also, it was rather remarkable that, you know, there was the use of masks as a way to model to America that we are not in normal times. We didn't see that at the Republican convention. In fact, it was almost like a repudiation. There were over 1,000 people at the White House on the last evening, sitting together very closely, no use of masks. Anyway, an interesting contrast, but let me get you to weigh in.
I agree with John. In some ways, it was a very safe convention. And in other ways, it was a real high wire act, because what Democrats did was they said, all right, so we're not going to be in a giant hall with an audience. And they just did things completely differently. And they did Zoom conferences and all sorts of technical things. They had moderators and MCs that made it sort of a higher production value than you've ever seen at a convention before. And I think the production value for the Republicans was a little bit more high school play, and the Democrats' version was a Broadway production. Like, it was really complicated. But I do think that, you know, I agree with John. Joe Biden is not nearly as well defined as Hillary Clinton. And for Democrats, that's a very, very good thing, because Hillary Clinton was defined in a more negative way when she got her nomination than probably any Democrat who's ever gotten the nomination before her. So there was an introduction of Joe Biden. I thought one of the things that was interesting was Joe Biden gave the speech of his life, and it's not the first time he's given a terrific speech. But up to that point, you heard Republicans talk about, you know, Joe Biden and mental acuity and things like that. That was completely absent at the Republican convention this time. They moved to he's in a cave, but not the he's not completely with it. Because he kind of dispelled that during this convention. But I do think there was a lot of unity there. There was the entire breadth of the party, from Bernie Sanders and AOC all the way to John Kasich, who, you know, was a Republican running for president in 2016, and John McCain through video and his family. So they showed sort of a wide coalition, both ideologically, geographically, and ethnically and racially.
So back to you, John Fortier. It was an interesting visual at the Democratic National Convention insofar as there were, you know, many Republican voices who feel that the party has definitely lost its way, has become the party of Mr. Trump as opposed to the principles that the party has stood for decades. There are now also 24 former Republican members of Congress who are throwing their support behind something called Republicans for Biden. We'll see, you know, if this works. So let's go forward, gentlemen, very quickly in the few minutes we have left. So back to you, John Fortier. Will these strategies on both sides work going forward? How much of a difference? You both said that it doesn't make a big difference to the conventions. What should we be looking for? The campaigns, the role of the debates? What are the factors going forward that will really determine the outcome?
Well, I do agree with Jibba that ultimately the conventions probably aren't going to be the difference maker. That being said, they are, while not as watched by as many people in the past, they are one of the events that was watched by a lot of people. So that was a big thing. And sometimes we do have convention bounces and changes in polls afterwards. I don't think they're necessarily lasting. And you can remember the 2008 convention, Republicans actually did quite well after the introduction of Sarah Palin. And there was a moment of a few weeks where things were going well. And then, of course, they lost the election badly. But I do think we should watch to see if there's some change in opinion, especially if there's a narrowing and closeness to Donald Trump doing better. Because I think some of that will start to make this race more urgent, because right now the polls are pretty wide between the two of them. And if there was some message that at least temporarily worked, I think that's important. Look, I think the debates are very important. Again, no one debate is going to make the difference. But again, it's the opportunity not only for lots of people to see these candidates, but to see them face to face. And I think Joe Biden could do very well in a debate. But again, just because he's the less well-defined candidate, I think there's probably some opportunity for Republicans and Donald Trump to define him more negatively, as usually happens as we go towards the election. Both sides' negatives tend to go up. Donald Trump's are already sky high. So I think I would watch that as well. You know, again, this we have all sorts of things on the ground. For Republicans, is there improvement, or can they point to some signs of improvement with coronavirus and the economy? And is this law and order argument going to have some traction? I think those are all things that we saw the possibility of. We saw the argument laid out in the conventions, but we'll just have to see if that sort of thing sticks. The real campaign essentially starts now, and the heightened attention will be for the next few months, and that will look a little different than it has for this long, long pre-campaign period.
So turning to you, Jim Kessler, how do the Democrats fight back? Many analysts say there were so many false statements by President Trump, who has the bully pulpit and therefore a certain advantage, you know, sort of characterizing Joe Biden as some kind of, you know, left-wing radical, which is really one couldn't recognize Mr. Biden, but saying that he would be a vessel for the left wing. He doesn't have opinions of his own. You know, how does Biden fight back? And what role will the debates play? And what role do you think this controversy over the post office and the slowing down of mail and the denigration of mail-in ballots by the Republican Party in the age of a pandemic, are these some factors that will be in play?
I do expect this race to tighten. Biden, in most national polls, has a lead somewhere between 6 and 10 points. And I just don't think that's going to last for a long time. I expect some Republicans are going to come home to Trump, and I think there'll be a tightening. I think Trump has the tougher job in the next 65 days than Joe Biden. He has to change the narrative on his handling of the coronavirus. He has to make people believe that what we're suffering through the right now in the economy is just a blip, and, you know, we're going to get back to normal and everything is going to be good very, very soon. And he has to convince people that Joe Biden is something that Joe Biden really isn't. And if you listen to the convention, it was like, he's a socialist, he's a socialist, he's a socialist, and he is the most anti-police ticket that there ever has been. That's not to say that Trump can't succeed in doing that. You know, the Democrats' coalition is very broad. And part of that broad coalition are people who are very far left, particularly on some economic issues. So, you know, what Joe Biden is going to have to do over the next 2 months is actually do what he did in the primary that succeeded, which is, I am not this far left candidate. I am the centrist. I am the moderate. I pushed back on these folks. And suburban voters are going to have to hear this. At the same time, the left base, urban base of the country that's mostly white is going to have to swallow it. And that's not easy to do as well. So, you know, the debates will matter, but, you know, I expect tightening, but I think Trump's job is more difficult than Biden's at this point.
Would you agree, John Fortier, that President Trump has the more difficult job, even though if you, again, listen to what he said at the convention, I alone can fix it, again, this message that he articulated before he was elected president. Notwithstanding some of the facts that we're facing with the coronavirus pandemic, he's promising a vaccine, which is very unlikely to happen, you know, some kind of a magic bullet. Once again, in closing, your thoughts with regard to any kind of so-called October surprise, as we call it in the United States, you know, what could happen on either side? You know, what should we be looking for?
Well, I do think Donald Trump has the harder road to hoe. He's behind in the polls. And again, if you contrast where he was in January, February, where it might have been a tight race, but he certainly was going to be able to run on the fact that the economy was good and he was the incumbent and was going to get some benefit from that. And now he's having to explain how peace and prosperity has been snatched from the Republicans, but he is the one to be able to bring it back. That's, you know, a tricky message. He might be able to pull that off, but I think that's important for him and Republicans that they make some of that case. You know, secondarily, is the Democratic Party going to be seen as more to the left? And that's the law and order issue is one new wedge issue that Donald Trump is trying to portray there. Certainly immigration issue and other things portraying Joe Biden as much more establishment versus this more populist party. Those are the kinds of issues that we're going to maybe bring some of his voters or new voters that are like them back to him. So he's got to do both those things, you know, make sure that he explains why things are going to get better after this crisis. And secondly, bring voters home and bring that message home. And that's a tricky thing to do.
Well, you get the last word, Jim Kessler, especially with respect to what the Democrats need to do, what Joe Biden needs to do. I understand that he is going out into the what we call the battleground states, those six states that you always talk about that really will determine the election, whether it's Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania in the north, or Arizona, Florida, and North Carolina in the south. Will those visits make a difference? And what about the role of Kamala Harris, the vice presidential nominee?
It's interesting that Kamala's name barely was mentioned at the Republican convention. And I think she's a real asset to the Biden campaign. And I think right now, Republicans aren't really sure how to deal with her. So they just ignored her for the time being. I think Biden's task is this. Number one, don't let Trump change the narrative on his handling of the coronavirus. Number two, be the healer on the issue of race and social unrest, not lock, stock, and barrel behind people who are protesting to the point where there is looting. And number three is he's going to have to leave Delaware and show up in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and some of these other swing states. Trump is going to show up there. He's going to have to show up there too. It's not going to be enough to reach out via Skype.
Well, gentlemen, on that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Press Conference USA. But I guarantee to our audience that we will be back. We'll have you both back talking about the campaign in the run-up to the elections. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights. We'll see you back on Encounter in the coming weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.